Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Get a chair, grab a seat, or we'll sweep you off your feet. We move, we groove, you got mail. Ease your legs, rest a while, all you gotta do is smile. We're swell, can't you tell? When the show begins, you better hold on real tight. Or before you know it, you'll be high as a kite. Take a break, settle down, we're the only show in town. SRO, don't you know you got mail? Give it up, don't think twice, we're a hurricane on ice. What the hell, give a yell, ring your bell, show and tell. Mademoiselle, give a smell, you got Mel.
You've got Mel.
And Mel has the amazing, the incredible Vivian Kerfield. So just let me, I stopped sharing. Oh, everybody can see my screen.
We can see everything that you're working on, right? Wonderful.
As we say, oy vey. So Vivian, start at the very beginning. First of all, Mazel Tov, you have two books coming out. It's incredible, and we'll talk about them. One is on two of my favorite singers, one is on one of my favorite other topics, which is transportation. But why don't you start at the very beginning? Who are you?
Who am I? I am a person who is living her dream. I am so blessed and lucky to find myself at this juncture in my life when many people are stepping back, sitting in a rocking chair, not really retiring from work and from life. And I find myself more busy. I work, I'll call it work, but it's not really work because I love what I'm doing. I work more than I ever did when I was actually working. So that's where I am now.
You're a poster girl for never giving up.
That's right. That's my mantra. Nothing is impossible if you can imagine it. If you can imagine it, if you're willing to do the work, if you're willing to put in the time and you have some luck, it will happen. It just will happen, you know, and I'm so fortunate that I can be writing books now, but that wasn't my dream when I was little.
Okay, so let's go back now.
Okay.
Little Vivian Abrams in New York City.
Right. Little Vivian, I was very shy and very timid. People laugh at me when I say that I was very shy because I love people and I always loved people. But I guess the word was timid. I was afraid to do new things. I was afraid to go new places. I was afraid to meet new people. And I really don't know why. I had, loving parents, but that was my nature. But I was always the peacemaker. I was always smiling. I was always very loving. I mean, that's part of my DNA. That's like, I used to work in a department store for a while because we needed health insurance for my family, for my husband.
Which department store would that be?
Marshall's. Okay. So like Marshall's, TJ Maxx, that chain. And my husband was working, but he was self-employed at the time. So we didn't have insurance. And we had three young children. And so I went out and I said, what can I do part-time that I could get health insurance? And back in those days, I guess it was the 80s, early 80s, you could work at Marshall's part-time and get health insurance. That was a pretty good deal. So I worked 24 hours a week and I worked at the service desk. And everybody would wait online to be on my line. And it was their turn to go to somebody else. And they'd be like, no, that's okay. I'm waiting for Vivian. Because they just wanted to chat. And they wanted, I guess, that little bit of sunshine and positivity, because, you know, everybody needs that smile and everybody needs to feel better about their day. And so they would, and people would say to me, what are you on? You know, like, what are you taking? Because you're always smiling. And I was like, I'm high on life. You know, every day is a new beginning and there's always, no matter how bad things are, there's always something joyful that you can find. And, you know, so, I mean, if you're not in pain, and if you're, you know, obviously, it's very hard to be joyful if you're in pain or ill or, you know, really sad things are happening in your life. But
Vivian, it sounds to me, though, like you did, I mean, we never met before. And it sounds to me like there were some challenges that you encountered growing up.
Yeah, definitely. Well, just being so timid, that's a challenge. I was always the shortest person in my class, tiny. My last name started with A, so now I was in the front. I always wore glasses. I had very, very, very poor vision. So I sat, I was always up front and kind of tinier than everybody. But yeah, I think being timid was probably the challenge. And I just wanted to be home. I wanted to be playing with my dolls. I wanted to be playing with my friends. I wanted to be reading, always reading.
So the reading was a bit of an escape from the outside world?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I mean, I grew up on the Lower East Side in New York City, right across the street from the East River, in the projects, which in those days, in the late 40s, early 50s, they were really lovely. They had been built for the veterans coming home from World War II, and my dad had been in the Army, so we lived there. And it was amazing. I mean, Halloween, can you imagine? Halloween, you don't even have to go out of the house, right? Because there were 104 apartments in the one building. So you went around with my older sister and some friends, and you went to every single door, 104 doors you could knock on. It was awesome without even having to go out. So I had a very joyful childhood. But I mean, you know, I guess growing up is a challenge no matter where you are. And
you just have this wonderful, kind, happy disposition, which is really the best natural defense against anything that comes at you.
Yes. Yes. I was always, my sister used to call me Pollyanna. Not in a nice way.
No, I think like they could make a Shirley Temple movie of you.
Right, exactly. With the hair too, right?
Yeah.
And I hated my hair. I hated my hair. Oh, it was the bane of my existence. I hated my hair. It was always curly, curly, curly. And my mother kept it short because it was easier to take care of. And all my friends, especially in junior high and high school, they all had Mary Tyler Moore hair, you know, like straight with the little flip. And I would, I let my hair grow long when I was in high school. Finally, it was up to me then. And I would sit with those big rollers. They used to have those big rollers and the big bouffant dryer, hair dryer. And for hours, and I would take it off, take the rollers out, comb my hair. It was perfect. So smooth. I'd walk outside New York City, boing with the humidity. And it was this huge curly mess. But now you can see I have grown a little bit more kind to myself, and I'm embracing who I am.
So when did you start to love yourself? At what age?
I think I always, fortunately, had a core inside me. I knew I was right. I knew I was good. I knew I was smart. I didn't always follow my own path because I was a peacemaker and I didn't like waves and I like things to be smooth. So there were many times when I did things that wouldn't have been my choice, but it made life smoother. At this point in my life, I think probably when I turned 60, I was like, you know what? This is what I like. That's what I don't like. And I began being a little bit more vocal. And when I was 64, my son gave me a very unusual birthday present. He took me skydiving. Yes.
Oh, I thought you were going to say he sent me to a retreat for writers.
No, I wasn't really writing at that time. I mean, I'd written a book for parents and teachers, like an adult book. It was a guide.
So you went skydiving.
Yes.
From the agoraphobic girl who didn't want to leave the house.
And I'm afraid of heights.
Yeah, of course. I mean, aren't all normal people should be afraid of heights, Vivian?
Right.
I think that to love heights, you have to be a real machine gun.
Right. Right. But you know, I mean, I went to visit, my son was married, living in Chicago at the time. I get off the plane and he says, guess what we're doing tomorrow, Mom? We're going skydiving. And, you know, I was like, all right, I'll go. Because I'm up for a challenge.
Good. Because my birthday is tomorrow.
Do you want to go skydiving?
No. It's like approximately the last thing in my life that I want to do right now.
Right.
I used to fly all over, but I hate flying. So that would be like a big no-no. Oh, happy birthday, Dad. Guess where we're going?
Right.
So you jumped out of a plane, and good for you. How many times did you do that?
Once.
I rest my case.
Right. I mean, I did not like the original free fall because there's a lot of pressure on your chest as you're falling flat. I did not like the moment when the parachute opened because you shoot up like you've been shot out of a cannon straight up. But the 10 minutes of gliding down was beautiful. And of course you're with somebody else. They don't let you go by yourself unless you've gone many times. So you're strapped into this professional guy who's done it a million times, you know, and it was awesome.
Like for me, being strapped in and jumping out of an airplane sounds like a a lethal injection in Alcatraz. I'm getting nervous, Vivian. Let's go back to relaxing things.
Okay.
Like children's books.
Very good. But the thing is, when my feet touched the ground, I knew that if I could do that, I could do anything.
Oh, wow.
And that's when I started writing for children.
Wow. And before that, you were a teacher, a kindergarten?
Right.
So what did you study?
That was my dream.
What did you study?
Early childhood education. And I was a kindergarten teacher.
That's incredible.
You know, they are new, they are innocent, they are honest, they are authentic. And in those days, back in the 60s and 70s, I mean, we read stories every day. That's what we did. We read picture books and we played with blocks. And we learned how to be people.
This is incredible. My late mother was a kindergarten teacher.
Really?
And I used to help her out once in a while in kindergarten. I loved it. So I have a theory that people who write children's books have a kind of an arrested stage in their lives.
Yes.
And then they write for that age.
Yes.
That they are stuck at. So if you agree with me, then what age were you stuck at?
I guess I would say 8.
I would say so too, because your picture books are a little more advanced than the ones I write. So you're writing with the 8-year-old Vivian.
Yes, I think so. I mean, that was an age where I was reading like a fiend. And I would go to the library. And of course I was very short, very little. And I would take out a stack of books and I'd walk home with this stack of books. I looked like books walking, you know, because you couldn't see me except my little feet, you know. And I would sit down and I would read book after book after book. I mean, I would just read the book, put it down. Next book, put it down. Next book. And when I would have breakfast, if there wasn't something to read at the table, I would read the box of cereal. I would turn it around and I would read all the ingredients and, you know, whatever there was to read. Yeah.
Incredible.
So 8 years old, I would say.
Okay. So just before we move on to your incredible story as a writer, what were your favorite children's books? If you can name 2 or 3.
Yeah. So, I mean, I can't, other than, I guess, The Little House by Virginia Lee Burton. I think that was the first book I had. Then the next book that I owned, because, you know, back in the day, you really didn't own a lot of books, you know, back in the late 40s and early 50s. But when I was 5 years old, I think I had my tonsils out, because, you know, that was the time of, if you had a sore throat, take out the tonsils, right? And I can remember in the hospital, there was a line of children. We all were in our little white gowns. And there must have been like 10 or 12 of us standing in a line waiting to be taken in. And they asked, who wants to go first? Now, here I was very timid, but they had told me I was going to get ice cream. And I was like, I'll go first. And I still, to this day, I love ice cream. And I have it just about every day. So, but what I remember is when I woke up and my parents came to visit me, they brought me a little golden book, The Three Little Pigs. So, you know, even then. And then I loved Little Women, Little Men by Louisa May Alcott. I loved Pollyanna. Those chapter books that were the older classic ones, the Hardy Boys.
Yeah,
I was
too.
Crazy about the Hardy Boys and
I
Nancy
love the
Drew.
Hardy Boys. I have them all. Wow, you see, we do have something in common, Vivian.
And Nancy Drew. And here you go.
No, I want the Hardy Boys.
Well, I don't have Hardy Boys.
Frank and his brother. I can't remember.
Yes, Frank and Joe. Frank and Joe. His name was Joe. And their father was, I don't know, some kind of rich lawyer or something, whatever.
So Vivian, with all of these issues, okay.
Yes.
And your love for children, and you didn't write all these years. And then what happened?
No. Well, when I was teaching, I was reading other people's books. When my own children were born, and I have three children, and that's them up there when they were little. But I did write a few little picture books. I just want to turn my phone. Just little stories for them. Do you want to see one of them?
Of course.
I can show you.
Vivian, this show is about you. You can show us.
This show is about me. Okay. So I wrote a story just for my own kids. And I even made it into a book. And it was called The Balloon Man. And it was about, it's about a guy. You can see I'm not an artist. But
for me you are.
Well, and it's about this guy, he's selling balloons, and a mouse scares him, and the balloons go up in the air, and he fortunately has more balloons in his pocket and he blows them up. But it's kind of like a color book, because the balloons, like this, the yellow looks like an egg. And so a few years ago, my daughter-in-law, who's an artist, she loved that little story. And so she actually made like a book for me with beautiful illustrations. And
oh, wonderful.
So I know, yeah. So it's really, really cute, you know, and the pink one is an ice cream cone. So maybe one day I'll do something with that, right? But, you know, so that was my foray into writing when I was younger. You know, I wrote little stories, but never, ever did I think I would have real books.
So what was the pivotal moment? What were the 10 minutes that changed your life?
So two things. In 2005, my children were all grown and married and on their own. And my husband said, you know, you always said you wanted to write a book. You have the time now. You should write that book. And so I wrote the book that I had wanted when I was a teacher, a book to help teachers and parents. And that's this one. And those are my kids, actually. So you can see that's the little girl, my daughter, Carolyn. That's Jason. That's Peter when they were little. Because my daughter-in-law took pictures of them when they were little, and she created this. She drew that. So this is kind of like a textbook for parents and or teachers. And it gives you the name of the story and a little summary. And then it gives you a parenting tip. And then it gives you a place to write, you know, we did this activity, we did that activity. And then there's a craft activity and a cooking experience that all match up with that story.
And so these are original stories of your own?
No, these are like Whistle for Willie, you know, by Ezra Jack Keats. These are Madeline.
Madeline, my favorite.
Okay, right. So, so it's all published books that other people wrote, and I just give a little summary and say why a parent should use that book with their child to build self-esteem, to help their child master tasks and skills. Anyway, so I wrote that book and I self-published it.
That's such a great idea.
Right.
That's such a great idea.
Yes, thank you. So I did that in 2010, and then in 2011, my son took a skydive.
Did people buy it?
Well, you know, when you self-publish a book, it's all on you.
Exactly.
Not only do you write it and take care of the printing and everything, but you also have to market it, promote it. And I knew nothing about that. So I got books out, John Kremer's 1001 Things to Market Your Book, and I had a pile of books about how to sell your book. And for a shy, timid person, that's not exactly what you choose to do with your life. And so for a year or two, I knocked on doors of bookstores and children's clothing stores and children's gift shops and libraries. And I'd say, "Hi, I'm Vivian Kirkfield. I have this wonderful book. Would you like to," you know, whatever I said to them. And many of them took a few copies to see if they could sell them. And I sold copies enough to make back the money that it cost me to have it printed.
That is incredible.
Right. And but now I have like 50 boxes of, you know, 7 books in every box that I, you know, because then I got busy. Then my son took me skydiving. And then I said, you know what? This isn't what I want to be doing. I want to be doing that. I want to be writing. I want to be writing the picture books. I don't want to be telling people about somebody else's picture books.
So Vivian, can you share with the audience approximately like a decade plus or minus how old you were when you had that thought?
Yes, I was 64. That was in 2011, whatever. So I'm 73 now, I think, something like that.
Would you say kind and horror?
Thank you.
Yes, it is.
No, it's like you have to have a passion. That's my belief.
No, but for all of these 60 years,
yes,
growing up on books, loving books,
yes,
studying childish development, studying childish development.
Right.
I just invented that.
Well, it is childish. We all have to be childlike.
Exactly.
Childish, but childlike. Yes.
Okay. Well, there's a discussion that we're going to have another time.
Okay.
Because I'm very childish.
Oh, that's also good. I wish I was more childish.
Okay. Listen, I can help you be childish.
Good.
Help me become a better writer. Anyway.
Perfect.
Okay. So yeah, we have a date next week. So okay. Now, so you went skydiving and then you had this epiphany that what I want to do with the rest of my life, maybe many, many, many decades, is to become a recognized published writer.
Exactly. I want to write for children. Right.
That's one out of, you realize that you're one out of 5,000 or 50,000 people that have the same dream. You do realize that.
Yes. Yes. I mean, when you meet people, I meet people and they say, "Oh, what do you do?" I say, "Oh, well, I write for children." "Oh yeah, I'm gonna write a book too," or "I'm writing a book." And that is true. We all have stories to tell, but the difference is that most people aren't going to have the passion, the patience, the productivity, practice, whatever you want to call it, because you have to keep on writing, write more, and the perseverance to make it happen. So I call it the 4 P's, you know?
Yeah, I was just going to say there's a psychological theory called the 4 P's.
Oh, is there?
Yeah. So I'll send you. So there's passion, perseverance, productivity, and I forgot, perspicacious.
Patience.
I forgot that because that's the one I don't have.
Okay, that's right. And that's a really difficult one. And I am very fortunate because one of the things that's part of my DNA is patience.
Okay, so you're 60.
Yeah.
A little
then,
bit.
Right, I was 64, right?
And how do you go about this now?
Oh, that's such a good question, yeah. So I was already, I had just started blogging. I knew nothing about the internet because I grew up with, you know, like typewriters and mimeograph machines and, you know, all of that stuff. So I was afraid to even turn the computer on. My husband used to turn it on for me because I thought I would break the world. I was sure that by pressing delete or the wrong key, I would affect everybody else's computer.
You could destroy the world.
The world, yeah, right. I mean, the president would be calling me saying, "What did you do?" You know?
There's a children's book here. You know, one morning, Vivian pressed the lead, and all the lights went off in the room.
That's right. That's right. And I still can't open like a CD case, you know, like that has a CD. Yeah. So it was a big learning curve to start using the computer, to start blogging. But I knew I had this show me how parent teacher book. If I didn't start getting the word out, I was going to have 100 boxes or 1,000 boxes. I mean, right? I was going to have boxes. So I needed to start spreading the word. So I was blogging, and I was blogging about picture books. I was reviewing picture books, and somebody came to my website, to my blog, and they left a comment and they said, oh, you should hook up with Susanna Leonard Hill because every Friday she reviews a picture book. And that's what you're doing. So, you know, you should go and see her blog. So I went to her blog and I connected with her. And she's an amazing mentor. She's a multi-published picture book author, but also she does a lot of contests for writers. Everything is free. She just had a contest now called Halloween Z, and you have to write 100-word story about Halloween. She has one for the holidays. She has one for springtime. She has lots of contests. So I began participating. Oh, there's another P. Participate, see? Because you have to participate in life, right? And incredible. So I was participating. I did her contests. I left comments on her blog. I began meeting other people who were also in that community of people who wanted to write picture books. And many of those people now that were back in 2012, just beginning, they have books out now too, because they did the same thing. They put in the time, they practiced, they had patience, they were perseverant, you know, all of those things, and they had the passion. So and I began participating in other challenges that were out there on the internet, on people's websites.
Is participation in the piece, or it's another P?
It is. That's what I said. It's another P. And you need that. You need that. You need to participate.
After our conversation, please put the link to Susanna and the link where people can buy your books.
Okay.
Link to your website.
Okay.
So people can benefit from your wisdom.
Such as it is.
Listen, you're truly remarkable.
Well, you know what makes me the happiest is that at this point now, I can help other people. And that's what I do. So there's this guy who, his name is Justin Colon. He has a mentorship program. And I was a mentor last year. The person who I mentored, she got an agent a few months later, and her books are out on submission now. So this year, I couldn't just pick one person because I had 70 people who sent me applications. Can you imagine? 70 people. So I picked 2 people to be mentees. I picked 2 people to be runner-ups, and I picked 4 people to be honorees, and I promised them each a critique and a Skype session. And in fact, yesterday I had 3 of them on Skype.
And you don't get paid for this?
No.
You're wonderful. Next year, you're not going to have 70 applicants. You're going to have 71.
Well, good.
I'm going to join those people.
Wonderful. Wonderful.
I have to learn your wonderful pixie dust. So,
you know, it's fun. It's so much fun. It's like joyful. Every day for me is a joy.
Incredible. So very briefly, yes. How did you find your agent? And I want to talk with you about the 2 wonderful books coming out.
Okay. So my agent. So in 2012, I joined Julie Hedlund's 12 by 12. And you had her just the other day. And
she's incredible.
She's incredible. And in the end of 2011, which was right after I jumped out of that plane, right after I self-published that other book, she announced, I'm going to have a challenge. I'm going to call it 12 by 12. And we're going to try to write 12 books in 1 year. And she had that challenge because she had participated in Tara Lazar's Paibo Idmo, which was Picture Book Idea Month, which is now called Story Storm. So she's another mentor who really has given back to the community amazingly. And her challenge was to come up with a new idea for a story every day in 1 month. So now you have 30 story ideas. Julie said, I did that, but I haven't written any of the stories. I have lots of ideas. So her challenge was take the ideas and actually write the story. So I joined 12 by 12 the first year in 2012, and I wrote 12 stories. And then the next year I wrote 12 stories. Some of them were horrible, but some of them are books now. And the next year, 2014, I was like, you know, I've sent out some of my stories to agents and they all come back. No, thank you. No, thank you. No, thank you. I must be doing something wrong. Just because I got A's in English doesn't mean I can write a picture book. So in 2014, I took 5 classes. I don't recommend doing that because it was crazy, but I took a class in February. Susanna's class, actually, was my first class, and it's fabulous. I took a class with Renee LaTulip on rhyme, writing rhyme. I took a class with Emma Walton Hamilton. I took a class with about writing nonfiction. Anyway, so over the year, with Mira Riesberg, I took 5 classes. And by the end of 2014, I already had one agent who said, I would like to represent you. So my writing had, as far as writing picture books, had definitely improved.
Was this an agent that you had met or somebody you just wrote?
Yeah, it was an agent who I actually had taken her class, but I knew I didn't want her for an agent. So, you know, because there's the right agent for everybody, but not every agent is the right agent for everybody.
Right.
Some people want someone who's very like, go get them, powerful or whatever. I wanted somebody who was organized because I'm not. Somebody who's a great communicator, because many agents are not. Many agents, you send them your manuscript and you don't hear, I mean, and they're your agent, right? They're all that you're already working with them, but you don't hear from them for months.
Yeah.
Because that's just how they are. You know, they're busy, whatever. I wanted somebody who was going to be responsive to me. And I wanted somebody who was not only a good business person, but who was kind and compassionate. Because for me, the world is not a kind place many times. And there's no reason why a person should, on purpose, work with people who aren't kind. I mean, sometimes you can't help it. But if you can help it, then you choose compassion, right? That's what you choose. So I searched, and by 2015, I had 4 agents who were interested. They all had all asked for more work, you know, in addition to the one story I sent them. And
well, you realize that this is ridiculously amazing. Like,
right,
but they didn't
come to my door knocking on my door while I was sitting doing nothing.
It doesn't matter. I want to add another P word.
Okay.
And that word is talent. You have incredible talent.
Okay. And that is
talent with a P.
Talent.
Talent with a capital P. because now I don't want to spoil all your alliteration.
Right. Patel.
You know, we could talk for hours, but we're here to celebrate two books of yours.
Thank you.
A bunch of books. You have two amazing new books coming out.
Yes. So,
which I've taken a peek at because they're not in the stores yet, but you can order them.
Right.
You can pre-order them.
This book is actually in the stores. Yes, right. So you wonder, where do you get ideas, right? People always ask, where do you get your ideas from, right? So I was online looking and I saw this picture. And, you know, I grew up in the 50s and I said, I didn't know that Ella Fitzgerald and Marilyn Monroe knew each other. I didn't know that. I didn't know that they helped each other. And when I see that, my curiosity, so that's another P word that starts with a C, curiosity.
And my curiosity was piqued.
Right. I'm piqued. Right. Exactly.
I'll help you with all the P words.
I appreciate that.
You help me find an agent and I will help you with all the P words.
Okay, wonderful. So I began to do research and I found the story. But there was no book that told me that they were actually friends. And so do you know what I did? So again, it's like, it doesn't come to you. You actually have to do some things. So what I did was I emailed the author of one of the Marilyn Monroe books that I had read. I found her email online because she's a former professor at some California college. So her email was there. So I emailed her and I asked her and she was like, no, I don't know, but you should go and look online. The president of the Marilyn Monroe fan club has a website. He might know. So I go to his website. He has an email. I email him. His name is Greg Schreiner or something. And he's amazing. And he holds memorials for Marilyn Monroe every year at her grave with his fan club members. And he said, I don't know if they were really friends, but I'll give you the phone number of the woman who was Ella Fitzgerald's promoter for 37 years. I'm like, okay. And you see now again, I'm timid. I hate making phone calls, especially to people that I don't know, that I have to ask them to do something for me. That's really hard. But I knew that if I didn't do it, I would kick myself. So I called her and I left a message and she called me back and she still lives in Hollywood, in LA, wherever. And she was charming and we chatted for 2 hours and she said, yes, they were friends, you know, not like they didn't go out to the movies together because Ella was very straight laced and Marilyn was very party girl. And she was very, they were both very shy, actually, but they, every time they met, they chatted and Marilyn really did help Ella and Ella really did help Marilyn. And that's the story. So, yeah. So I hope people will buy it because it's an awesome story about friendship.
Let me just help you. It's an incredible book. And it's inspiring for young children and also their parents. What I found incredible was the way you're able to convey adult ideas in a way that an 8-year-old or a 7 or a 6-year-old can understand.
Right. Thank you.
It was very, when I'm able to travel, I'm going to go to New York and I'm going to buy one of those books and run up to New Hampshire, get you to sign it. Because these are two of my incredible, heroes as a kid.
Thank you.
I have Ella Fitzgerald's autograph. I was like blown away to read this book. Let's just mention your other book.
By the way, it's illustrated. You know, whenever you talk to authors, the illustrator, especially for a picture book, is so important. I mean, that's half or more than half of the story. And so Aliana Harris is the illustrator, and she did she did just a phenomenal job. I mean, you know, it's incredible. Like you really get the sense of the story from, you know, you could just read the pictures, actually.
And the incredible thing is she didn't work from photographs because there aren't those photographs of them.
Right. Yet. I mean, she created them, you know, she.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, she did a beautiful job. So thank you for wanting to hear about that book. I really, you know, I'm very, very proud of it and happy. And it's all about inclusion and it's all about women power and it's all about speaking out. I mean, it's all of these relevant issues that we need to convey to children these days.
And Marilyn, for all her beauty as an adult, she was somewhat of an ungainly, or she perceived herself to be ungainly as a child, and stuttered, and so you can become really whatever
anything
you want to.
Nothing is impossible if you can imagine it. That's right. And you know, the only failure is the failure to keep trying, and that's the next book, right? So this is soft cover right now, but it will be hard cover. This is just the advanced reader copy that they send to reviewers and everything. And it will be all be in color, you know, like that. It's gonna be really beautiful, but
I'm gonna buy this book too because I read it. And again, you've taken the inventive process and you've made it clear to young children. And you've done something, I'm an inventor. And
I read that. I think that's amazing.
No, I think you're amazing. Because what you've done in this book is you haven't sugarcoated it and said, you know, this is the guy that invented the bicycle. Because there wasn't one guy. There was numerous people.
Right.
Each one building on previous ideas.
Correct.
That is the beauty, of this book. This is a book that tells it like it was. And
now
everybody in my audience has met the woman who tells it like it is. So now I understand how this book could have been written.
Well, thank you. And this book, by the way, and the artist, the illustrator, is Gilbert Ford, and he did a beautiful, beautiful job. But what I love about this is a couple of things. The first thing is that it shows for each invention, the car,
the hot air balloon.
The hot air balloon, the first
thing. I'm going to help you with your book.
Okay, good. The hot air balloon, I know, right? So each story shows that moment when either as a child or as an adult, that person said, wait a minute, maybe I could do that. You know, like the rocket guy.
Yeah.
Robert Goddard, you know, even when he was a child, he was fascinated with birds and things that flew, but there weren't planes. And one day he went up in a tree and he looked up at the moon and he said, I'm going to build a vehicle that can go up there. And he was like, I don't know, 14 or something. And he went to school and he asked the teachers, you know, and they were like, are you crazy? Nobody could ever get to the moon or whatever. But of course, you know, he's the father of rocketry. I mean, it's because of what he did that we are going to the moon and beyond.
So Vivian, this is incredible. It's really an incredible book for me to read about other inventors.
Thank you.
Usually I ask my guests to sing a Beatles song.
A Beatles song?
Yeah, but I'm gonna make an exception for you. You can sing a song that Marilyn Monroe or Ella Fitzgerald sang.
Okay, are you gonna sing along with me? Because I don't know, I probably know Beatles songs better than I know Ella and Marilyn songs.
So what's your favorite Beatles song?
I don't know. I have lots of songs I like, but I don't know if I'll remember the words. You know, you're talking to a timid person. And when I was in school and the teacher would point to you, Oh, it's like all of the knowledge that was in your head, it was gone.
You know, one of the things that things that I'm trying to come to terms with is that you say that you're timid, but you were happy to be on this show. And
yes.
Hundreds and maybe 1,000 people from all over the world will see it.
Right.
And you don't
that
come
would be
across.
Nice.
And you were happy to be on the show and you weren't timid about it.
One-on-one or with a small group, I never had a problem.
No, but hundreds of people are going to see this video.
Yeah, but I'm not standing up in front of them right now. That used to be my hardest thing. But I have gotten better. I went around the world last year, actually, if you can believe that, because I had 3 books that were launching. The Pippa book, the Sweet Dream Sarah book, and the Otters book. And yeah. I wanted to, you know, get the word out. And I went and I visited friends, critique buddies in New Zealand and Switzerland and Italy. And it was amazing.
Next time you'll have to drop by Israel on the way.
I will. Yes.
And we didn't talk about Pippa, which is a book about a mouse and a Passover plate.
Yes. It's sweet. It's in rhyme. It rhymes.
Yeah. It's very sweet, but you're not really that Jewish to write a book about Passover. And you
right.
told me that you can write a book about anything.
I could.
And I love could. It.
I know. Well, because it's really a book about courage and friendship. That's what it's a book about. I mean, it just happens she's searching for her Seder plate, yeah. But it's not, you know.
So you as a timid Vivian.
Yes.
Find your courage,
yes.
Writing about people with
who
courage.
Find their courage.
I love
yes.
it.
Yes.
I love it.
Yes, I do. Most of my books, yeah. Sweet Dream Sarah, whoops, that was the first one. And that's about the first African-American woman who had been a slave. But when, after the Civil War, she goes to Chicago and she builds a piece of furniture and gets a patent for it.
You know, I read this book before I knew you, before
okay.
I knew who you were.
Yes.
She invents this kind of, she invents a kind of something that turns into a bed.
Yes, a folding bed. That's right.
So you're so famous that I read that book long before I knew who you were.
Yeah, so that's the schematic.
I had literally forgotten that you wrote that. And that's a great book.
Thank you. But because we are all underdogs. We're all underdogs in this world. And we have to find the courage to speak up, step out, stand up, and follow our passion. Do what we want to do. So many people, they have a dream when they're young, but then, you know, life happens. And I think hold on to your dreams.
Listen,
because you can do it.
This has been a remarkable, it's almost like a birthday present for me, you know?
Yes, happy birthday.
Yeah.
We need to sing happy birthday. Maybe that's what we have to sing.
You want to sing happy birthday to me? That would be a first. We can do that.
Yes, I think so, right?
Go for it.
Okay. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Mel. Happy birthday to you and many more.
Thank you, dear. Wow, Vivian Kirkfield. You managed to avoid singing a Beatles song. But
I know. Next time, if you ever have me again.
I would love to have you again. It's incredible.
We should sing I Want to Hold Your Hand, right? Because we can't hold people's hands now, right?
Okay, so do you want to start or shall I start?
You can start.
Okay, I don't remember the first few words.
So
you start.
Oh, I don't know how does it start? I something. I want to hold your hand. I want to hold your hand. I want to hold your hand. And when you touch me, I feel happy inside. It's just a feeling that my love, I can't hide. I can't hide. Oh, my gosh. And you. Yeah, they have very good words.
Do you realize that this interview, which should last 35 minutes, is already 58 minutes long?
Oh, my goodness. Sorry.
I don't think Facebook will fire me, but I think that I'm going to say goodbye. And I hope that we will be in touch in the future, because I am blown away by your writing and by your wonderful personality.
Thank you. You're very kind. And I'm available, you know, I'm on Facebook, I'm on Twitter, I'm on Pinterest, I have my blog, you have my email, so I'm always available.
Don't forget to write underneath the video all the places where people can find you.
Okay.
Some of the contests you talked about, so that we will be able to help other people to fulfill their passion.
Okay. And when I write my website, I'm going to have to write .com, .com, because Facebook is not happy with me. And I know, right? They love me, but they don't like my website URL. And whenever I put it anywhere on Facebook, they block it. And then they apologize and they say, we fixed it, but then it isn't fixed. So it's some kind of a glitch, but yeah. So what can you do? You know, Facebook is kind of faceless. There's nobody there, you know. Maybe somebody from Facebook will be listening and they'll fix it finally.
Or it could be the kernel of a new book.
The kernel of a new book, right. Mel, thank you so much.
Thank you. This
was so much fun.
It was a wonderful birthday present. Thank you very much.
Bye. Okay. Bye.